This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Do they increase the assistance in terms of military support and more boots on the ground? Do they withdraw and say this is no longer our issue? That's going to be quite difficult. The DRC is a key member of SADC.
That was South African international relations analyst Roland Hinwood, who says SADC countries have only difficult choices as they meet today to decide what to do about Eastern DRC. Details coming up also. The UN says warring parties in Eastern DRC are using rape and sexual violence as a weapon of war. And analysts consider the implications of three member states withdrawing from ECOWAS. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Leaders of 16 countries from a Southern Africa Development Community, or SADC, are meeting in Harare today to discuss the escalating conflict in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. M23 rebels, allegedly supported by Rwanda, have overrun the key city of Goma and say they'll soon march to the capital, Kinshasa. Darren Taylor reports.
17 soldiers from a SADC peacekeeping mission, including 13 South Africans, have been killed in Goma this past week. The SADC summit is being held in the shadow of aggressive statements from Rwanda's President Paul Kagame. He has warned South Africa, in particular, not to become further involved in the conflict. On Thursday, Kagame suggested SADC troops should leave Eastern DRC and criticized South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa.
He's also there pretending to be playing a peacemaker role, and he has a force that has been fighting alongside FDLR and has been fighting the M23, because these are people who are not supposed to be in Congo. M23 are not Rwandans, please. These are Congolese, and one time he accepts it, then another time he says no, part of it is yes, and then the other part is from Rwanda, and these are and South Africa dares even issue threats about what is likely to happen after that, and so on and so forth. Of course, we will see what threats they are talking about.
Kagame says Rwandan troops are near the DRC border to protect their country and are not providing direct military support to M23, despite UN reports saying the opposite. The UN says Rwanda is supporting M23 for a variety of reasons, including profits from illicit mining of critical minerals in eastern DRC, which Kigali denies. M23 is led by ethnic Tutsis and says it's fighting to protect the rights of the minority group in DRC. Kagame, who's also a Tutsi, accuses the DRC government of sheltering Hutu militias responsible for the 1994 genocide in Rwanda, but he denies he's trying to depose DRC President Felix Tshisekedi. South African international relations analyst Roland Hinwood says SADC countries have only difficult choices to make as they meet to decide what to do about Eastern DRC.
How do they position themselves? The risks of a regional conflict, definitely something that is there. And then what are the options open to SADC? Do they increase the assistance in terms of military support and more boots on the ground? Do they withdraw and say this is no longer our issue? That's going to be quite difficult. The DRC is a key member of SADC, so that's not going to be easy. Once you've taken this role as a peacekeeping force, yes, there will be tough times, but you can't just walk away from it. If that is not an option, what do you do?
But military analyst Dean Wingren tells VOA the SADC force doesn't have the firepower necessary to drive the rebels out of Goma.
We still got a couple of thousand troops in theater. They're in a very dire, precarious situation. The main base is at Sake, which is about 25 kilometers to the northwest of Goma Airport. And that whole area is surrounded by M23 and the Rwanda Defense Forces. They are in a very dangerous situation in the sense that they don't have much ammunition. And M23 knows this, and they've imposed certain conditions on the troops there that restrict them to their base, and they don't have freedom of movement there. And the first thing that needs to be done is to get them out of that immediate threat area. And that needs to be done diplomatically.
SADC, the African Union, the UN, the European Union, and countries including the United States and China have called for an immediate ceasefire and for Rwandan forces to leave DRC. The United Kingdom and Germany are among donor countries saying they'll stop giving aid to Rwanda should it continue to support M23. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Teresi Kaikiwamba Wagner, the Democratic Republic of Congo's foreign minister, tells VOA's Roger Muntu of the French to Africa service that eastern DRC's largest city is under foreign occupation by Rwandan defense forces, adding that M23 rebel forces, together with Rwandan forces, have gained control of much of the city of Goma after days of intense fighting. The president of Rwanda, Paul Kagame, has denied his country is supporting the M23.
Goma is under foreign occupation by the Rwandan Defense Forces, the official army of Rwanda, our neighbor. Indeed, we have seen after days of intense fighting a presence of the M23 and the RDF that have now gained a large control over a majority of the city of Goma. When it comes to the death toll, because the situation has been so volatile, but also because the M23 and the Rwandan army have an interest not to depict and to allow the world to see the brutality of their attack, it is still very difficult to have a firm estimate of the number of deaths that that have resulted in these days of an onslaught. We need to differentiate also in the fact that there were a lot of deaths linked to the fighting, but also many deaths linked to the fact that Rwanda very purposefully sabotaged key infrastructure in the DRC. They cut off the electricity, they shelled hospitals, and they also cut off the water. They cut off airport supply lines, and they also cut off road supply lines.
Does your government, Her Excellency, view this as a failure to defend a major city that is Goma? How do you explain this setback, and how did this happen?
Of course, it is a setback, and it is an infuriating setback. I will not shy away from saying that. We need to acknowledge the fact that, and this has been reported for the past months, if not years, Rwanda has invested massively in arming itself and arming the M23 in eastern Congo. They have invested in weaponry of a sophistication that was unknown until then in the region, weaponry that has been so performing, if you want, that even the United Nations, at a briefing to the Security Council, clearly said that they were outgunned. We have to also be cognizant of the fact that Rwanda violated at many occasions the ceasefire that had been negotiated through the Luanda process and put in place on August 4th by using technologies such as GPS jamming, which means that the whole aerial navigation in and around Goma was completely neutralized, if you want, because of GPS jamming. It meant that military supply routes were in great difficulty, but also humanitarian support and civilian administration. So we should not shy away also from being cognizant and recognizing the fact that there has been an immense investment of Rwandan resources to wage this war so relentlessly, and also, and you know, a willingness of Rwanda to do so with extreme brutality and with no consideration whatsoever of the human loss and the human cost of this warfare.
That is Teresi Kaikiwamba Wagner, the DRC foreign minister, speaking with VOA's Roger Muntu. When M23 rebels swept into the Congolese city of Goma this week, world powers urged them to immediately withdraw. Instead, according to reporter Sabiti Jafar Alkatanti in Goma, the insurgents are intent on showing they can restore order and govern.
For now in Goma, things seem quiet. The border have been opened between Rwanda and DRC. We are seeing some shops being opened. Today, I was to a small market, which has some activity. Some traders were selling food, and this is because some roads were opened. You know, Goma was isolated for around 1 year, and because M23 was occupying all village around Goma, but now as M23 occupy now Goma too, some roads have been opened.
And the M23 insurgents are intent on showing they can restore order and govern. Very recently, Colonel Nanga, head of the alliance, the political coalition backing the M23, said residents can go back to normal activities. So are you seeing normal activities in and around Goma?
Yes, that's what they said in the press conference yesterday, Thursday, that for now it's time for them to restore peace and security and to open the door of development and progress. So for them, they will fight, they will combat all illegalities like corruption, like everything which can be bad for Congolese people. And they promise that they will do their best to develop the zone, to bring back internet, electricity have started to being restored, and also internet. One of the mobile network we have here is now running internet since some hours. And people now can chat, people can be connected, and this can push people to like M23 because he promised, and now we are seeing results.
And also, Jafar, Nanga also pledged to get children back in school within 48 hours and open a humanitarian corridor so people displaced by fighting could return home.
Yes, school is important. And Nanga said he wants school to be organized, but we also must know that some schools were attacked, were bombed by rockets, and they must figure out a way to take care of teachers. You know, in DRC, primary school is free because the government pays teacher. And as now M23 leads the city of Goma, teacher must know who will pay them for them to teach children. And also the educational program depends by Kinshasa. And as for now, Goma doesn't have any link with Kinshasa. I don't know what teachers and M23 will talk together to get an agreement for that teaching program start.
Can M23 manage to maintain order and run services in Goma, a city of 2 million people?
Not only 2 million people, but Goma has also IDPs, and these IDPs won't go back, all of them. Some of them will decide to stay, and this will increase the inhabitation of the city of Goma. So they will need to do more than what they are expecting for now, because Goma, they took the control of Goma in 2012. Goma was a small city, but now Goma is a big city, and they have to do more than what they expect.
That was VOA reporter Sabiti Jafar Al-Katanti. He talked to me from Goma. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. As the humanitarian crisis worsens in the eastern DRC, aid agencies are deeply concerned for thousands of people in desperate need of safety and aid after leaving their homes. Global humanitarian organization World Vision warns that many families fleeing the fight for control of the eastern city of Goma face unimaginable challenges following several days of intense fighting between the M23 rebels and the Congolese army. Reporter Ruben Chama spoke with David McKinley, World Vision's head of operations for the area.
Goma in eastern DRC has been facing, for a very long time, ebbs and flow of insecurity. And in the past 2 years, the insecurity has steadily risen to the point where entire swaths of territory were not accessible. There was a high amount of vulnerability. Literally millions of people were being displaced by growing violence. And in the past couple of weeks, we could see the armed group, M23, take multiple cities and towns. And it led ultimately to, we could say, a pitched battle for Goma, where basically the entire city was forced to hibernate and stay in their houses for several days. And it's only in the past, I would say, 24 hours, really, where the city has begun to open up again. There's still no electricity. There's still no really phone services. Water isn't frequent. So it's a city still in crisis, but we can say hopefully the worst of the conflict in this city has passed, but we have greater concerns for many other areas throughout Eastern DRC.
And what's the current humanitarian situation like?
It's gone from bad to worse, because before all of this conflict in the past few weeks, there were already a couple of million displaced people, many of whom were children, unaccompanied children, vulnerable families. And as this conflict again has grown, the number of displaced people grew with it. But due to the conflict, access became almost non-existent. So we're in a situation right now where there's a greater number of people with front-level needs and almost no way to get that to them. So we're really at a crisis point in terms of our humanitarian efforts. We're doing our very best to try and negotiate for humanitarian access, but it's incredibly difficult right now. We're planning for worst-case scenarios, but we are hoping, as a humanitarian community, for better outcomes.
How is World Vision and other aid agencies coping with helping those affected? And what are the main challenges working in that region right now?
One of the main challenges is making sure our people are okay, because so many of our responders are from Goma. They live in Goma, so they haven't been able to move. They've been terrified. I've had multiple staff members tell me their houses have bullet holes in them, shrapnel. So really, people could not move. So when we look at these growing needs, and some of these needs, of course, would be potable water, be able to provide really just the essentials of household items, really the basics. Food assistance is going to be massive, especially for when you can consider children who have fled, haven't eaten for a few days. We're really at a crisis point. But we can't help so many people because access is a concern. And the well-being and safety of our own responders, not only in World Vision, but from across the humanitarian community, has been in question. So it's really going to be an important few days, because as we look forward, as access slowly begins to come up, we're going to be looking to respond as much as we can with very few resources.
What is your message to the international community? What sort of appeal, especially to cater for the unfolding humanitarian crisis?
We really do need more support from the international community. Access is slowly opening up. Needs are greater than ever. And we're asking that we can partner together across this global community of ours to provide first level needs, as again, we try and create a brighter future for so many children and families who have been affected by this violence. Unfortunately, what I've seen in East DRC since I've been here for several years has been a lack of a voice for children and families who suffer in this conflict. There's an expression, when elephants fight, the grass suffers. And we don't hear about that grass. And what I'm talking about, of course, is so many countless families who have been forced to run for their lives. And now not only have they run once, they're being forced to flee again and possibly yet again. And the international community, we really need their voice to advocate for safe civilian space, that we can provide the key essential needs for them as we look to find a greater peaceful solution in Eastern DRC.
That was David McKinley, World Vision Head of Operations for the Eastern DRC, speaking with reporter Ruben Chama from Nairobi. Regional analysts are weighing in on implications of the historic withdrawal of three member states from West Africa's most influenced bloc, ECOWAS. The decision, formally recognized by ECOWAS on Wednesday, marks the first time nations have quit the regional body since its creation a half century ago. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The departure of Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger from ECOWAS raises critical concerns, especially in the areas of security and economics, according to analysts who spoke with VOA. Some say the split could weaken joint military operations and further destabilize the Sahel, a region already struggling with jihadist insurgencies. But on Wednesday, ECOWAS Commission President Omar Aliou Touré told reporters in Abuja that the bloc was willing to continue security cooperation despite the split. ECOWAS also announced that its doors remain open to the departing nations and urged the remaining 12 member states to continue to support them. Rotimi Olawale is a political affairs analyst.
I think that ECOWAS has taken a pragmatic approach to the unfolding situation. I expect also that there would be continuing cooperation around security issues, because issues of peace and security pose a big challenge.
Junta led Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso officially quit the regional bloc on Wednesday after a year-long notice. Relations between ECOWAS and the departing trio of member states soured after a July 2023 coup in Niger, which led ECOWAS to threaten military intervention. In 2023, they formed their own bloc, the Alliance of Sahel States, seeking closer ties with Russia. Touré said ECOWAS plans to hold a technical session with the three countries to discuss the way forward. Chris Kwaja is the Nigerian director of the United States Institute of Peace.
There are so many issues, and I think a technical session of that nature is important to allow each party to weigh where it stands on the issue of separation.
Trade is one of them. Analysts say economic challenges may loom large for the three departing nations, especially regarding access to marine ports to the south.
The countries would get to a point where they would seek, at the very least, greater cooperation with ECOWAS countries, as they would require access to the ports. The three countries are landlocked, and so they would continue to depend on the sub-region for trade partnerships that ensure that they are able to have a booming economy. My predictions are that the three countries are coming back to ECOWAS, maybe perhaps not in the short term.
In recent years, ECOWAS, which was originally founded to promote economic integration, has faced increasing challenges in maintaining stability across the region. Kwaja says public sentiment toward ECOWAS is shifting because some citizens view the bloc as an entity that primarily promotes the interests of regional leaders rather than the masses.
ECOWAS was a bit detached from the citizens. But now a big lesson for ECOWAS should be to invest heavily in the people. Back to the point about the ECOWAS agenda of moving away from an ECOWAS of states to an ECOWAS of city of people, of the people, because the people constitute the pillar upon which ECOWAS is sitting.
The Sahel region has become the world's deadliest terrorism hotspot, accounting for the highest number of terror-related deaths last year. The outcome of the looming technical session remains uncertain, and many will be watching to see how ECOWAS moves past its most significant political crisis in decades. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA. VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Wuhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Killer Williams, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.